and welcome back to an exciting episode of Extra Features Podcast. Today we have a film that's available on Netflix. Yes, you heard me correct, Netflix. We're moving up in the world on this show. Bullitt County, director, actor, writer, producer. I tried to get as many people as I could, but they're the only two that would show up, so we're going to go with this. Today we have David McCracken here and Josh Reiford. Thank you for coming to the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Hi.
I am so excited. I mean, I want to start right at the beginning. How did you guys get on Netflix? I mean, this is the indie dream.
Well, I tell you what, I mean, it starts with, you have to make a good film. so we, you know, I'd like to think that that's where we started from. But, no, I mean, it was a long road to get here. We did what every indie filmmaker, you know, starts off doing. You finish the film and we worked the festival circuit for a little while. And after we had had our world premiere at the Austin Film Festival a couple years ago, we headed out to the American Film Market out in Santa Monica that they have every, November? And we just started, you know, working the circuits there, getting to know people, getting to know distributors, sales agents, that kind of thing. And we ended up getting in pretty good with the guys over at Gravitas. And over the course of the next, I don't know, 6-8 months, something like that, we were able to work out a deal with them. And they kind of take it from there. You know, I mean, we were able to make a few requests as far as things that we wanted to see with the film. But at a certain point, it kind of became them being able to use their connections to get us to the next level and to get us some to, you know, something like Netflix, which is, like you said, it's like it's the end all be all for indie films, is what everybody hopes that you can get to.
Well, I feel that you guys don't get lost in the Amazon Prime market, at least on Netflix. Like, even I don't have to deal with screeners. I don't have to email you back with passwords. I click and there it is.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And it's also one of those things that, you know, like, we don't, you know, every indie filmmaker knows this. You want people to watch your film and you're like, hey, you can go rent my film here, da, da, da. And, you know, so now we can just be like, hey, it's on Netflix. Like, you can go watch it. You've already paid for it, so go see the film, which is really cool because it gets so much more exposure.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. I think one of your things that attracted Netflix to it, it's some quality filmmaking. Like, the directing looks like a real film. Like, I don't think you guys cheaped out on anything. It looks like the producers put some money behind this. And I like the look of the film. It looks like a real film to me.
Thank you. I mean, that's
what it is. Yeah, it's a real movie.
It doesn't look like an indie film. You guys got a little bit more quality behind it, is what I'm saying, with costuming and this and that and locations. It looks like a real film.
Yeah. Well, you know, we
that always, was by oh that was just a lot of conscious decisions of you know, like, restricting ourselves when we said, okay, we're not going to do any handheld. We're going to make everything intentional. So there were very few things that happened by accident on this, because we knew that it was our first one, so we did want to come out looking like a bigger budget movie than, yeah, like an indie shaky cam sort of thing.
And so much of that comes down to every single person in our crew and the cast, like, being on board with that vision from the beginning. You know, I mean, everyone, but from the, you know, the most menial department up to, you know, David and I, everyone was working their ass off to make sure that we weren't cutting corners anywhere. You know, I mean, we quote unquote cut corners in, like, you find ways to do things that aren't going to be as expensive so that you can spend that money in other places. But it really is everyone being on their game to make sure it happens that way.
And we've got to discuss, I was so impressed when Richard Reichel showed up. I'm like, oh my God, Richard Reichel, who has him in his film?
Richard, that guy is awesome. I mean, you look at his IMDb record, and he's probably topped over 400 films at this point.
404. Yeah. I looked it up.
Oh my God! And he was only in the 300s when we were working with him. So he does not stop. But it's also one of the nicest people that you will ever meet. Yeah, he's just an amazing individual and an incredible actor. I mean, he really is kind of an underappreciated national treasure.
Did you guys reach out to him, or did his casting agent go to – how do you get that guy?
We met him a long time ago at a at a kind of writer's retreat called the New Harmony Project in the town, a very small town of New Harmony, Indiana, which is actually where we shot a lot of the beginning stuff in the movie in that town. So it was kind of a nice bit of circuitous fortune, I guess. But yeah, we met him there. He was brought in to basically help workshop a writer's one-man show. And so Richard was kind of performing it for the writer every so often so the writer could see how it was and reworking it. And I had just gotten accepted to USC Film School at that point. And so Josh and I talked to him afterwards and told him about that and said that, yeah, if we ever make a movie, we'd love you to be in it. And he said, certainly, give me a call. And when we were developing this movie, I wrote the part for him, and he remembered us and said yes. So it was nice.
I think that's pretty cool. He remembers you. 400, 300 films in, and he's already 400. Oh, yeah, I remember talking to you guys. That's pretty cool, I think.
It's pretty cool, yeah.
Now, your cast is very diverse, I would say. Was that the plan all along? Because they look like strange friends, I guess I would say. People that wouldn't normally hang out with each other.
Yeah, that was, you know, a lot of it was written with the actors particularly in mind, and we did want to create a sense of, you know, like that these people maybe don't belong together anymore. You know, it's been 10 years since they were friends, and they've all clearly moved on in their own ways or are maybe dwelling on the past in other ways. And it's kind of one of those situations where maybe they should just, you know, cut their call it quits and not be friends anymore. But because they're so stuck with nostalgia and reliving the good old days, it's just kind of a fool's errand to try to do things the same way that you used to do when, you know, 10 years have gone by.
I do want to discuss, you can do a little bit of flashbacking in your film, and Gord has a beard and then has a mustache.
Now, yes.
Is that a real beard or a fake beard?
That was real. We designed the shooting schedule for the flashbacks. So the flashbacks were the very last things that we shot in the movie.
Okay, so he had the beard, then he shaved it for that. Because I was wondering, I'm like, why did they shoot this? How many months did he have to, like, that's a good beard.
Yeah, that was definitely it. We talked with the Carla Boyles, the hair and makeup supervisor, and we had discussed various things. And, like, I had grown my hair out for over a year, and then we just basically decided to do it all for real and save the flashbacks for the end and basically do a lot of subtraction. So he got his hair cut, I got my hair cut, and then he got his beard shaven off. Needless to say, he really enjoyed that. He felt a lot freer after that.
So does he have a beard normally or no?
I think sometimes.
Maybe he kind of goes back and forth. Okay. I don't think he has it at the moment, but yeah.
Okay, wait. Your character Wayne has very long hair. I mean, how did that feel? Like, I didn't think that was a normal look for you. He more like a hippie kind of guy. And they were
Wayne,
like,
Wayne the curly-haired guy, or?
Hold on, I had the wrong character, don't I? The character you play with the long hair. Isn't that Wayne?
Keaton.
Oh, I'm sorry, Keaton. Yeah, sorry. How does that feel? Like, is that you, or is that just like, because you're directing and you have to be this guy at the same time. So how do you get into both characters?
Well, I mean, that was something we had a long, pre-production period. And so that was part of a discussion early on with Carla about what kind of hairstyles these characters have. And so we knew that because we were dealing with the 70s that, there may be the possibility for long hairstyles. So we just kind of, made some decisions very early on. I told Mike, I said, hey, man, we're in it together. Let's just grow our hair out for a year. And so that's what we did. And, you know, you go through that period where it's kind of it gets annoying. But then at a certain point, it's all basically the same. So, yeah, it was all just luckily decided very early on. So we didn't have to worry with wigs or anything like that.
You answered the question perfectly, even though I phrased it incorrectly. You guys work with a little bit of blood. I don't think I'm spoiling anything. How was dealing with that process?
Blood is always interesting. You have to make so many considerations. depending on where you're shooting. You know, when you're outdoors, it doesn't really matter because you can, I mean, you have to be conscious of when you're resetting a scene, certainly. And it takes certain planning with particularly like wardrobe. But blood really becomes an issue when you're indoors, which is, I'm sure, probably why you're asking. I not necessarily in this one because we learned a lot of things, but one of our previous films, we ended up having to suck up the costs for like a $600 couch because somebody screwed up and we completely ruined a couch in this house. So yeah, it makes a lot of things more more difficult, for especially for resets and for cleanup and that kind of thing. It's kind of a pain in the ass sometimes.
Now, I'm going to have to ask, was it hot or cold while you were shooting? Because blood's very cold. It's sitting on you guys. And you guys are out in it a lot.
Yeah, we got lucky with weather where it was generally pretty nice, except the night times were very cold, especially towards the end of the shoot. But I think probably the worst was without giving too much away, my character ends up in some dire straits, and I do have a lot of blood on me at a certain point that required some rigging, some tubes, things like that. So, and we filmed a lot of that over the course of an entire day. So we had to start really early in the morning, and I think I got somebody said I got close to hypothermia at some point, but it was it was very cold. But luckily the day warmed up and then, you know, went from there. But yeah, it's messy, it's sticky, it is cold, and my character has blood on him through most of the movie. So it just kind of like, it just makes your clothes heavy, if nothing else.
But I will say, we shot during that time of year purposefully so that it would be cold at certain times, because it's hard to fake when actors are supposed to be, you know, kind of chilly or whatever, if you can clearly see that they're sweating or whatever. Like, you can't – it's hard to act being cold. Like, when you're really actually cold and you feel like you're going to die, it just – it amps up the acting in it and really – it kind of brings out subtle things that you wouldn't otherwise see. So that was purposeful, and, you know – it sucks, obviously, being in those scenes, but I think it helps the film in the long run.
In writing a film, you guys touch on a bunch of different genres, comedy, maybe even romance at times, I would argue, and a thriller. So how do you guys classify your own film?
We call this an action thriller. But yeah, a lot of that's very purposeful because we were trying to emulate movies from the 60s and 70s and some of their structure, especially Easy Rider, where you kind of get a long period of hangout between characters at the beginning, and then it kind of amps up and gets a little more plot heavy or thrilling. And so Easy Rider was definitely a touchstone for the actual structure of the movie and the tone somewhat. So yeah, that's partly why we did that, was to try to make it seem like, oh, you maybe found this movie that could have been made in the 70s, but it is, you know, coming out now.
Now, did you guys, I don't want to really use this word, have films used as a reference? I mean, you kind of have a few digging scenes that could be related to numerous films. I think your ending kind of has a little bit of stuff from other films. Did you take influences, or this is just all, okay, this is what we're going to do?
Yeah, Easy Rider was a big one, and I'd say another one, sometimes tangentially and sometimes on the nose, was The Shining.
Yeah.
But yeah, there were a lot of them, especially for wardrobe. We looked at The Deer Hunter, and then for the cinematography, we looked at a lot of Roger Deakins stuff, especially Assassination of Jesse James. So we went through a lot of things for a lot of specific elements, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. And kind of like we were talking about earlier, that, you know, every department kind of needed to be on. And that was something that very early on in development and pre-production, I mean, we had a list of probably 20, 25 films, and at least every department head was basically kind of required to watch all of them. So that everybody had sort of a vision of, like, you know, what we were going for. And, you know, obviously certain departments, like David said, were focused on certain elements of specific ones, but, you know, we wanted everyone to be go into it with the same vision that we had.
So now I'm going to have to ask about that. Did everybody watch their 25 films?
I think most of them did.
I did. Yeah.
I know that a lot of the people we work with kind of just happen to see most of them anyway throughout their lives. But there were definitely, depending on the department or, like, say, the cast, there were certain movies that I emphasized to them more than other movies, depending on whatever they were working on. You know, like, for instance, like, say, The Deer Hunter. Not everybody needed to spend 3 hours watching it if they didn't want to.
That's a big homework assignment.
Definitely wanted Gwen, the costume designer, to do it.
I thought you were going to subject into Once Upon a Time in America at 3:45 right afterwards.
Yeah, might as well. Maybe we'll do that on the next one.
There you go. You guys go. I really think you guys are influenced by Shallow Grave, if you haven't seen it. I do see elements of that in this film.
Yeah, I use that a little bit, for sure. I use Shallow Grave and Simple Plan.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Sorry. I can just see influences. Not saying you copied it, just saying, yeah, I see that influence, which is great. I think that's fabulous.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Musical choices. You definitely have a very sense of style of music throughout the film, I find.
Yes. And that was also very, very intentional. You know, the composer is actually my brother, Aaron. And, you know, between he and I and David, we all have, I think, similar influences in music as well. You know, we kind of went into it with, a mix of, you know, our favorite film composers, but also classical music and other just sort of certain elements to, you know, kind of bring lots of different things together. I don't know if you had a specific question about music, but it was...
That's great. I really don't. I enjoy music. If something stood out and saying, oh, yeah, that song was amazing, I will say so that song was amazing. But I thought the music fit. I liked the mood of the music. I always thought it fit the scene. Nothing stood out as like, oh, that doesn't make any sense to me. I thought that was good choices.
Well, and it was cool. You know, the music sort of progresses throughout the film. It starts off, you know, you've got the whole first part of the movie is really kind of about this friendship. And so you have this very, like, folksy kind of sound to it, a very acoustic, like piano and guitar and, you know, very laid back kind of thing. And then as the film progresses, that kind of starts to fall apart and then it gets bigger and bombastic. And, you know, it still keeps all those themes sort of tied in together, but it sort of rips them apart and does new things with it. And you probably also noticed there's a lot of that very percussive kind of ringing sound, which that's us using bourbon bottles as percussive instruments. So kind of to tie in that whole thing that they're, you know, on this bourbon trail, you know, we wanted to draw real organic elements of the film into it.
Since you're bringing up the bourbon, I guess we should start getting some locations. You start off, I really thought the film was a robbery film right off the beginning. Like, I'm like, oh, it's a thriller. Okay, I'm in. Because I don't read anything about a film before I watch it. I go in cold. So, and then you progress, I'm like, okay, and then they get somewhere, then you're on the bourbon trail, I'm like, okay, this is not where we're going with this film. So was your plan to throw off the audience right off the beginning and throw in the bourbon trail, or is the bourbon trail always there? Or did you have a rum trail at one point, or maybe a wine tour?
No, we always started with the bourbon trail, I think. Yeah, it changed in iterations in terms of how many distilleries or wineries they visited and everything. But that was always kind of the basic plan, was Keaton wanted to relive the good old days and take everybody on the bourbon trail. Because the idea is that he knows his friend so little at this point that he's bringing a recovering alcoholic on it. So it's kind of a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, well, we didn't know. That was kind of a surprise to the film. Like, oh, okay, we're not going that way. I find you guys give me so clues and so little clues at the same time. Like, I think we're going one way, and like, nope, stop that door. We're going this door now. Well, where'd that door come from? I like that. I thought it was very good.
Yeah, we try not to be too predictable.
There was no predictability in this film at all. None.
That's great.
I will give you full credit for that. I mean, other than a few things, but that's just me watching way too many films.
Sure. Right, right. Well, that's the thing, is when you watch enough, you know, audiences are really savvy these days, and you want to find that fine line between making them comfortable with certain tropes and not being too out there, but at the same time zigging when they think you would zag enough to be surprising. So it is a fine balance you have to strike.
You hit it perfectly. There's no qualms on this end. So where did you find the farmhouse? I think we kind of got – I like the set design and all the places you picked. I like the bourbon house. Does that really exist, by the way, the Red River Winery?
Not the name, not the real play. No, not in any way, I guess. We used another store and made it up to look like a winery.
Okay.
I think everything is made up in this, isn't it? We didn't really take anything for real, I don't.
I mean, the only thing that's actually a real place is that tavern they go to. The tavern and the and the antique store. Those are both actual places. But pretty much everything else we just kind of made up.
I think we should give a shout out to where that's located. Like, where's that antique store? It looks nice.
All that town of New Harmony that I had mentioned earlier, the town that we met Richard in like 10 years ago.
Yes.
That's all in that town. So, you know, the stuff where they're outside, the antique store, the winery that they go into, the tavern, all of that stuff is really like within a block of each other.
Because your antique store, I have written out postcards, guns, signs, and a pocket watches. Like, it really sells all that?
I think so.
Yeah, actually, I think most of that stuff was already at that antique store. They have so much stuff. the owners of that antique shop, it's called Firehouse Antiques, were actually really cool because they have like a full, they go all around the country buying antiques and just kind of selling them all over the place, and they go on those road shows and whatnot. And so our production designer got started talking to them, and they essentially kind of loaned us most of the stuff for like the farmhouse set, and for the set at Gordy's house at the very beginning. Like, so much of the stuff was actually set dressed thanks to the owners of that antique shop just being super awesome.
Yeah, I do.
I think if anything, we actually had to move things because it was so packed.
Yeah.
I did make a note on the set design. Like, who worked on this? I was impressed. Everything looked authentic to me. Like, even down to the Polaroid camera, I'm like, that's kind of cool. Like, I really like your choice. Whoever did the set design, hire them again. Fabulous work. And the wardrobe.
Yeah, well, it was nice. Shooting on location is a big help as well, because I think you get something maybe that's a little more ethereal than you would on a soundstage. You just get that. It permeates everything. It permeates work ethic. It permeates performance. Things that you just kind of normally wouldn't get if you're just building all the sets on a stage. If you're actually in the place, I think it does have a big overall effect on the movie.
I have a question. One of your characters says, Adam Eve, Batman, same connection. Can you explain that to me?
What'd they say? What is that?
Adam and Eve and Batman, same connection.
Adam and Eve.
And Batman.
Was that one? That's one of Keaton's throwaway lines?
Yes.
Around the campfire.
You got it.
I don't remember that line being in the movie, but it's been a while since I've seen it.
So it had to be your film, so it's on my notes. I just wanted to know how they have the same connection. That was a question I had. I didn't know. Don't worry about it, man. We'll pass
it. It might be some closed captioning flub or something. Oh. Sometimes closed captioning doesn't translate it.
I have
right.
noticed. How was night shooting, by the way? You do a little bit of night shots?
It was cold. The thing with scheduling all these shoots is that you have to be very strategic, because you have to have a certain amount of time off between the shoots. So once you start throwing in, like, if you just shoot days for a week, it's pretty simple. Days are 12 hours on, 12 hours off, whatever it might be. But once you start throwing in odd times like night shoots, then it throws the rest of the schedule out of whack, because then you lose the next day because people have to rest up. And so, it kind of throws a wrench in a lot of things, which is why when you write in the script exterior night, you have to be very aware that it's going to be a lot more complicated for everybody, especially lighting and just in general people's work. I mean, it's just hard to be working at 4 a.m.
So how long were your days then? 12 hours?
Most of them, yeah. We never went over 12 hours. We actually kept very strict to not go over that. But, yeah, I mean, it would be anywhere from 8 to 12 hours every day. And we would – I think we were shooting like either 5 or 6 days on and then a day off to just rest up and recuperate. It was a very intense schedule. I mean, we shot the whole thing out in 26 days. It was pretty, there was no time for mistakes.
Well, and that's the thing too, is that we, you know, the shooting of it is just actually a fraction of the work that goes into it in general, during production, because, you know, if we're not shooting, we're getting a million other things ready for the rest of the production down the line, or talking to, or going through the dailies, doing selects for the editor. You know, every department is kind of prepping for the rest of the shoot. So there really was no actual breaks or time off, really. I mean, it was just always on to the next thing and making sure that the next shooting day was ready and so on.
So how was working with Guns?
Well, so those, let's see, those were all prop guns. And that was something that we decided pretty early on that we didn't want to have live guns on set, just because of the amount of times that they're getting pointed at people. And, you know, there's a lot of safety, considerations. And we had thought about using real guns. And in fact, we had guns picked out that we wanted to use. And then, after some talks between our production design department and our first AD, myself and the actors, we ultimately decided, rather than take any chances and, you know, have to have just so many other considerations in place, it was worth the, you know, whatever, it's like $10 a day or something to get guns from one of the rental houses and just use them for the shoot. And then that way no one has to have any second doubts about anything. So yeah, I would strongly advise that to anybody that's considering using weapons on set. Just put an extra couple $100 into the budget and just use props, because they look really good if you get them from the right place, and it's worth the stress that it takes off.
And even with the fake guns, it was still the same heightened level of caution, because, you know, we had a gun supervisor on set. Like, anytime there was a gun, they were with him. He was checking them constantly. Even though they're not fireable, it's still, you know, you could have some weird case of somebody switching the guns out or some crazy thing like that. We always wanted to make sure, because they look so real, that everybody was aware when there was a gun on set, even though it was fake. Because, you know, to somebody just kind of walking by, it looks like a real gun. And you have to make everybody aware who's on the vicinity of the set that it's all a fake gun and that it's been checked time and again.
Well, I do have one final question before we get to fun questions. You guys have a caterer and a craft service people on your credits.
We do.
Now, what's the difference?
On our set, the caterer was kind of, she was the one that was in charge of overseeing all of the food. And then the craft service person or two they were her assistants. It's not really the exact definition that you would use for that, but that's how it broke down on ours.
See, you didn't think I'd watch the credits, did you? I do watch the credits.
You're very good.
Usually Netflix moves you on to the next thing before you can finish.
They were trying to, but I watched on my iPad and I wouldn't let it. I kept saying no because I wanted to see.
Yeah.
Now, I also want to discuss the end credits when you do the old photos. I thought that was really neat. I liked that a lot. I thought it added more depth to the film that we don't really get at times.
That was decided early on, I believe, wasn't it, Josh, that we would do that? And I forget what there's yeah. other movies that do that. I know Lethal Weapon 4 does it, and I forget the other one that you came across that does it. But I always like that when, you know, and it's becoming in vogue a lot now with the Marvel movies to make credits watchable. Like they have a lot of fun animation, or like Harry Potter, they do the Marauders map in the third one. And I think it's always nice to make the credits themselves a work of art instead of just a block of text. You know, you might as well.
Yeah, I just thought you guys were going to have an extra scene at the end of the credits where your film was working. I'm like, I better watch these just in case there's another twist I've missed.
We have somebody's hand shoot out of the wreckage and set up a sequel.
Well, it's possible in this film. I really think you've left it open for that. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think it's there.
Questions, yeah.
There's a lot of unanswered questions, which I kind of like. That was good. Very good on that. So are you guys, and I hope I covered everything for you. I do have fun questions for you.
All right.
Fire away.
Okay. Because you've never been on my show, everybody gets asked this question. I need each of your favorite film and why.
David, do you want to go first? Or do you want me to take that one?
I have a cheat. I have my favorite and then what I consider the best. My favorite is Jurassic Park, and the best is Lawrence of Arabia.
The four-hour cut, I hope?
I'm not aware that there's any other cut, is there?
There is. There's a two-and-a-half-hour, I think, and a four, and I've seen the four on the big screen when it got re-released.
Oh, no,
ago.
Yeah. I only do the four on okay. the big screen, yeah. That's one of the few movies I actually don't I purposefully don't own on 4K or Blu-ray or anything because I will only watch it on the big screen.
Yeah, I've seen the four-hour on the big screen.
Yeah, the one with intermission.
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah, so that's my answer, my cheat.
It's all good.
Well, I don't have a cheat because my favorite movie and the best movie of all time is The Rock, starring Nicolas Cage and Sean Connery. And that's because I am an unapologetic Nicolas Cage fan, and I will watch all of his movies, even the worst ones. I will watch them at least once. The Rock just encompasses everything amazing about 90s action films and Nicolas Cage and Sean Connery. And it's amazing. And I will fight anyone that wants to go at it over that.
Oh, well, The Rock is
now,
a great
I would
film.
Take a 4-hour cut of. That'd be awesome.
Oh my God, absolutely.
I think you can put another half an hour in The Rock, no problems. I would absolutely enjoy that. No, The Rock I love. Now, since you guys are both filmmakers and you guys put 25 films on a list, I'm going to see what you guys are missing. Favorite, a film you should have seen to never have.
Oh, well, mine is Lawrence of Arabia. Oh. And that's because I haven't had an opportunity to see it on the big screen and I refuse to see it anywhere other than that, just knowing the way that David talks about it. So I'm still looking for that opportunity.
There's a lot, obviously. Up until a couple months ago, I had never seen The Sound of Music, and I did the social media for the TCM Film Festival. And they were showing it on the big screen. And that was one, too, that I think, you know, some of these movies you just kind of want to hold out and see on the big screen if you haven't seen them. And I saw it, and it was one of those I just couldn't believe I'd never seen. I was so familiar with it because of its cultural impact, but I'd never actually watched it all the way through. And it just blew me away. And it was one of those that I thought, man, I just really wish I'd seen it earlier.
Wow.
But I tend to have, like, a blind spot with a lot of musicals.
Okay. Your favorite movie snack, your last question.
Favorite movie snack? Oh, I say nothing beats sneaking some Chipotle into the movie theater. That's more of a movie meal, but
no, it's all good. Meals work. I can tell you guys a good story.
I mean, I'm all about eating just mountains and mountains of Skittles. But, you know, when I go to it, I prefer okay, so I like eating Skittles, but I don't necessarily always eat those in the movies. So my favorite thing to do is rack up all of my rewards points at AMC and then use it for free popcorn. Because free is always the best. Well, and then I get a Dr. Pepper and I pour a bunch of bourbon in it. And
that's what we want to hear. Your film's available on Netflix. Is that worldwide? Because I live in Canada and I can get it. So I guess it's everywhere Netflix is?
Right now it's, I believe, just U.S. and Canada.
Okay.
And I think they may be working on other spots, but Netflix is well, I'm sure you heard about their most recent quarter and how they tanked, what was it, $12 billion or something like that, the beginning of this past quarter. So who knows what's going to happen because they done messed up. But
the worldwide, we're VOD and Blu-ray and DVD, right, Josh, I think?
Yes. The only weird one I know is like Australia, and the only place that you can get in Australia is on Vimeo because they have a weird rating system that you have to go through. So we're still on Vimeo there.
So give everybody your website if they don't have Netflix and live in Russia. My listeners in Australia, my listeners in Ireland, where can they find your film then?
Excuse me. So you can find us on MrPicturesFilm.com, or you can go to BulletCountyFilm.com, and either of those should have everywhere listed that the film is available. And you kind of just have to check because it varies from country to country and region to region. But chances are if you live anywhere, especially anywhere that speaks English, you should be able to find it somewhere. I think the biggest place that's available is Amazon and iTunes.
Hang on. You have it on Amazon Prime too? Or you buy it on
Amazon? You can buy it. You can rent it on Prime.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for your time. I hope you had a good time.
Definitely. And, feel free to follow us. We're on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram at Mr. Pictures Film. And we're pretty active. So we love interacting with people because everybody's cool, mostly.
Great to hear. Have a great night. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you.